From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 14th of April, 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of Adium Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Matt Blaisdell. He's at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. In the second half hour of our program on many of these radio stations and online at willag.org, we'll talk with the president of the National Farmers Union. In today's agricultural news, the soybean oil dispute between Argentina and China has been brewing, though both nations are dismissing its importance. Still, word from the PRC of China this week puts soy oil imports lower than expected for the current marketing year, while soybean imports are up 7% year over year. And finally, China will continue to dominate our agricultural news for the day. The most recent financial data suggest its economy is still growing. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And then we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City about the agricultural weather forecast right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. And along the way, I will remind you to dial this number, 217-244-9455. We're still in the middle of pledge drive. Dial it now. More later.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby May wheat at 474 and three quarters, a settlement price down a penny and a quarter. July at 487 and a quarter, down 1.5 cents. May wheat in Kansas City, 490 and a half, down 2 and a quarter. Back in Chicago for the corn pit, 358 a settlement, up 5 and a half. July at 368 and a half in the corn, up 5 and a quarter. September at $3.78 and three quarters, up 5 and 1 quarter. And December futures up a nickel, $3.89 and a quarter, the settlement price for the new crop corn. March futures at $4 a penny and a half, up 5 cents. May soybean futures $9.69, up 1. July at $9.77, up 1 and a half. August at 971 and three quarters, three quarters higher. In September at 954, up 4. November beans at 946 and a quarter, up 1 and 1 quarter. May bean meal at 274.30, down 90 cents. May bean oil at 39.86, up 12 on the day. April live cattle, 97, 12.5, $1.20 lower. April feeders at 111.85, down $1.45. And the April lean hogs today at 77.42.5. Up 67.5 cents. Dial the number 217-244-9455. This is Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, $85.86 a barrel, up $1.81. In the ethanol, $1.56.2, a penny and 8 cents higher. The natural gas or diesel fuel at $4.19.4, up 3 and 4 tenths. That's natural gas. Now the diesel heating oil at $2.24 and a penny. That's 2 and 7 tenths higher. And the gold futures at $1,159, up $6.20. The Dow Jones Industrial Average stands at 11,104. It's just about 85 points higher. And the U.S. dollar down 0.32 at 80.184. There are some really good reasons, by the way, for you to dial that number, 217-244-9455, and pledge your financial support to this program, the Closing Market Report, and all of our agricultural programming that you can find at Will Ag and from Illinois Public Media. Director of Ag Programming here, Dave Dickey, is with us to tell us a bit more about it. And you've got some names, I think, to thank, too.
I do, Todd, and I want to first thank Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, who put forth a challenge this morning, said to our agricultural audience, when we hear from 25 supporters of agriculture, that he would throw $500 in the agricultural kitty. Well, you heard that loud and clear, and you blew the doors off that challenge this morning, and I have several people who contributed today that I want to personally thank for their contributions, including Doris Smith, Robert Bossert, Bruce Burke with AG, Rebecca Harness, Charles and Maureen Lambert, Ron and Sandra Bellrose, Steve Harriet, and Bill and Susan Langeberg. You can be the next to contribute at 217-244-9455 with your pledge of agricultural support.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. If you have not yet picked up the phone to dial the phone number 217-244-9455 with your pledge of financial support, please do that right now. We do operate partially on the funds that come from you, our listeners. About 40% of our operating budget for this program and other programming from Illinois Public Media comes from you, the listener, and it's important for you to give us a call. Make sure you tell the operator that you're calling in for support of agriculture. That's very important. And the second part of that is to tell them what radio station you're listening to. You might be listening one of several stations. Please let them know which station you're calling in from as well.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Time now to take a look at what's happened in the world of the agricultural markets. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois is with us. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon on this beautiful, gorgeous April 14th. Afternoon.
It is a magnificent afternoon. I'll bet farmers in your area are in the field. Are they planting?
Yes. And we have heard the word getting done by several. It's interesting when we talk to a pusher out in the tractor, you can tell there's a certain amount of tense level, not so much maybe the market action, but the mind is in full throttle to plant this early planting in April 14th. You know, the thing we have to say is definitely the weather is better than a year ago, and most people's stock portfolio is better than a year ago, and maybe even ahead of before the major recession. The two things that corn basically stole the show with a strong stock market and strong energy prices, the crop cast idea of a 1988 drought and maybe China buying of corn. 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, people, if you had your own private meteorologist, they were talking about those things about the warmer Canada and the similarities in 1988, 2 to 3 weeks ago. The other one that, of course, was talked about is the Chinese are starting to sell some inventory out of their private stocks of corn. They have over 40 million tons of corn to sell, so they do have a big inventory. The third thing is, in the corn market, is there was definitely profit-taking today. This early plant, of course, and the general feeling is that we'll probably find some extra acres. And it is profitable to raise corn and soybeans, not only in central Illinois, but around the world as well.
You know, the 88 is sort of an interesting thing. I know that I talked a little bit earlier, because I pre-recorded with Drew about that. He says it's too early and that probably just rumors, so he wants to dismiss that at this point, and I suppose it's hard, really, to judge that. But it does have an impact on the marketplace and pushed the market. Do you think that pushed the market very much today, or was it
well,
really
it was
the...
it was a definite factor. It caught my attention at 7:30 this morning. And I talked to a firm that uses freeze notice, and they seem to downplay it, and the guy I have a confidence in basically said some of the physics isn't exactly right, and you know, we have to worry about everything in the June time frame. But the market was obviously very short, and even with this early plant, which is in my opinion a 3 to 5 bushel advantage over planting late, it was monumental that we did see this market put on the afterburners that we saw today.
Yeah, that's probably the important part. We've got really clear and open weather. There's an awful lot of talk about how many people are getting into the field, how many are actually getting done this early or getting closer to being done this early with their plant. Yet corn futures went higher. Do you think it's a trend that can continue?
Well, history says, from April 15th to April 30th, the historic trend, with the exception of buying acreage years in the last 5 years, has been kind of weak for corn. So it'll be interesting to see. My general impression is on just how much higher corn has to go. We know two things. The corn crop is very large. higher prices does hurt demand. And number three, if there is a commodity out there that the farmers do own, that's the one that the bins are still busting at full, you know, at the seams on. So we have a big inventory. Demand still seems to be rather poor in the major livestock exports, and also, you know, the ethanol margins aren't as good as they should be.
Paul, you usually have a pretty good handle on lots of things. Are you scared at this point about inflation at all? And second to that, have you heard much about the price of anhydrous ammonia?
Well, the one that I want to really I watch very closely, because I do have a pretty large portfolio in major oil company stocks, is the oil market. And the thing that hurts is a good, on one hand, is the energy markets are going up and the stock market's going up, but the gasoline, the toll at the gas pumps is enormous, and that hurts you know, the public and the average consumer enormously. So that's you know, a double-edged sword. As far as the fertilizer is concerned, we're seeing a lot of anhydrous and a lot of fertilizer going on, and the thing that my customers tell me is there obviously was a major supply, because I don't hear any shortages, and you talk about powerhouses. And the other one that we're hearing is, of course, the large planter, not only here in the Midwest, but in the North Delta. I read a letter from a commodity analyst, and he saw you know, an enormous amount of large soybean planters rolling. And that tells a statement that, you know, we're up to date in the Midwest as far as planting the crop.
Thanks so much for being with us
today.
Have
a profitable day.
Hey, you too, Paul. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. If you have not yet dialed this number, 217-244-9455, to pledge your financial support for the Closing Market Report agricultural programming from Illinois Public Media, please do. It's quick. It's simple. It's very easy to do. Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. Dave Dickey is Director of Ag Programming here at the radio station. He has an update on where we are and what we still need to do, because there are all kinds of challenges all week, including one to put 1,000 phone calls into the station over the week.
That's
and
true.
To raise quite a little bit of money.
In fact, I had some statistics here that suggested that we were about a little over halfway to meeting the overall challenge of the radio station, which is 1,000 calls by around noon on Saturday. I think I did some math, and I think we need about 473 more calls to go in order to get to that point. 217-244-9455 is the number to call with your support right now. Say ag on the challenge.
Yep, say ag on the challenge. We got other people you want to thank that you were looking at, because there were an awful lot of folks that called in this morning, Dave. We thank them. We made a challenge, ag challenge yesterday. We had an ag challenge for another $500 today, and we met that, and we have some more folks to thank.
I do have more folks to thank. I want to thank Bill Bosdek. I want to thank Donna Henry, Doug Bloom, Donald and Doris Oliver, Betty Demling, Jeff Raby, Kent Staggs, Cornelius Offhorse, Schroeder Feed Service, Dennis and Kathy Wentworth, and Greg Henry. Of course, also Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics, who put forth the $500 challenge, which we made earlier today.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Hey, you can dial in now at 217-244-9455 with your pledge of financial support. It's really important. We really do want you to do that. And from Dave and I, thank you to all those who have given, and thank you to all those who will give. Now here's Dave Dickey. He's got all the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, officials in Buenos Aires and Beijing moved to play down a dispute that has crippled trade in soybean oil. Importers and industry participants yesterday said that Chinese imports of Argentine soybean oil appear to have slowed after Beijing began enforcing stricter quality controls and put import licensing in the hands of central authorities. China imposed the new measures on April 1st, asserting that Argentine oil contains higher than acceptable traces of solvents. China and Argentine officials say low-level discussions are underway to resolve the dispute. China's National Grain and Oils Center today, meanwhile, says the PRC is expected to import a record 44 million tons of soybeans in 2009-2010, up 7.3% from the previous year. Chinese soy plants also are likely to process a record 47.5 million tons of soybeans, including the domestic crop. The center has revised down projected soy oil imports in the year to September 2010 to 1.8 million tons, down 500,000 tons from its earlier estimate. The U.S. government has briefed poultry industry officials on a new approach that could lead to a quick resolution of a trade dispute with Russia that has blocked U.S. chicken exports to its top market. Details of the briefing were unavailable today. Russia banned the imports on January 19th after saying a chlorine wash used routinely in U.S. processing plants was in violation of its food safety standards. Russian news agency Interfax is reporting, though, that U.S. poultry producers have agreed to stop using chlorine in processing products for exports to Russia. Two market sources today say that China's economy grew about 11.9% in the first quarter from a year earlier. Consumer price inflation in March was roughly 2.4%, that according to one of the sources. That would be a deceleration from the 2.7% rate in February. China is scheduled to publish its first quarter GDP growth rate and a suite of economic data for March tomorrow. The Commerce Department today says that sales at U.S. retailers rose more strongly than expected in March. Total retail sales jumped 1.6%, the largest increase since November, as consumers stepped up purchases of vehicles and a wide range of goods. Core retail sales, which exclude autos, gasoline, and building materials, rose 0.5% after increasing 1.2% in February. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media, and he and I would like you to dial this phone number. It's 217-244-9455. Thanks for all those who have already called in. If you haven't done it, please do at 217-244-9455. We haven't talked about money, but let's do that now. How about $120 if that's too much? Any amount will do. If that's not enough, and it may not be, $240 would be good, $640 would be great, $1,000 if you can. Hey, whatever you can do would be fantastic. The number to call, 217-244-9455. Just pledge your support for agricultural programming and the Closing Market Report. Make sure when you call that you tell them which radio station you're listening to and that you're pledging your support for agriculture.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Up next, farmers are putting too many soybean seeds into the ground. I'll have more on the optimum per acre soybean population rate and how that's been dropping in the last decade. The economics of soybean production have changed. The goal this year should not be to raise more beans per acre, but to make more money on the soybeans harvested. One thing a farmer should do to make that happen is to reduce the number of soybeans planted on an acre of farmland, says University of Illinois soybean specialist Vince Davis.
Well, over the last decade, we haven't seen the agronomics to economic optimum seeding rates change, but because we've seen the cost of soybean seeds increase as we've seen new technologies and genetically modified traits come on the market, the economic optimum seeding rates have been decreasing over the last decade quite dramatically and are now lower than most farmers are currently planting.
That is to say, maximum yield is no longer the goal because the seed cost is too high. Illinois farmers have historically sown between 180 and 200,000 soybeans per acre. That's too many, and the recent trend has been lower, but it's still too high.
We modeled 50 site years of data over the last 10 years, which included several different experiments in Illinois, and I modeled all of that together, which represented different seed treatment interactions and row spacing interactions, and put that all into one model. And that model clearly showed that you can maximize yield at 200,000 seeds per acre, but that same model also showed that at $70 per bag soybean seed cost for 140,000 seed count bags, you don't economically optimize your return on investment above about 130,000 seeds per acre.
To be clear, the University of Illinois is not recommending seeding rates of 130,000. However, it is possible to drop rates to, say, 160,000 an acre. The final stand will be considerably less. The U of I figures an 85% plant establishment off a 90% germination rate. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Have you dialed in yet? 217-244-9455. Call in with your pledge of financial support. On a Wednesday afternoon, time to check the cash grain market. Matt Blaisdell of the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana, is with us. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Don.
Have you heard of farmers finishing their corn planting there?
Not quite finishing. Well, I guess I should say that, and then I do remember one guy who did actually finish. He started, probably the first one started. He started early last week, and he did get done here today, or will be getting done here today if he hasn't yet. And he had 3,000 acres in the ground. Most guys, though, to the south of us, they're probably 20 to 30% done planting. And to the north of us, they just started here Monday. So we're only about 20% done. It's probably in our area.
How's the operation of the ethanol plant going?
Good here. You know, we're still having a decent amount of corn that's coming in here, both commercials and producers alike. And this rally has definitely helped that here. And margins are okay. You know, they have slipped since our early highs in January, but an ethanol producer is still should be profitable in this environment here today.
End users of soybeans in your area had been hunting. Are they still hunting for beans?
You know, it seems like bases have topped off here, but I wouldn't call them weaker just yet. They've been stagnant here for about the last 3 or 4 days, and I don't think we'll see another rally here for another couple weeks, but they are paying, you know, anywhere from 5 to 15 over, depending on what processor you're going to.
Matt, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Matt Blaisdell is with the Anderson's Climbers facility. He's in Delphi, Indiana, and one of the reasons that you should dial 217-244-9455 and pledge your financial support to this radio station. Make sure when you call in, you tell them you're supporting agriculture and which radio station you're listening to. The number to call is 217-244-9455. In just a couple minutes, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City about the agricultural weather forecast. In studio with us this afternoon is the Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media, Dave Dickey. Dave, thank you so much for being here. What are the reasons producers ought to call in? One of them probably is that, well, it cost about, well, quite a bit of money to put the program on, and they carry about 40% of the load, our listeners do, for the program.
Todd, it cost about $275 an hour for a broadcast here on this radio station. That includes everything.
From Illinois Public Media.
From Illinois Public Media. It includes the microphones, the electricity, salaries, expendable materials, our service with our agricultural sources, phones, you name it. It's $275 an hour. So for a $275 contribution at 217-244-9455, you can purchase an hour of the Closing Market Report / The Farming World.
Hey, that'd be a good idea.
That'd be a great idea. And you can say, I supported this show. Pick a show next week, whatever show it is, and say, I actually was responsible for that show getting on the air at 217-244-9455. And when you do that at that level, we're going to give you all kinds of wonderful thank you gifts. We're going to give you a couple of two-for-one member benefit cards, good for two-for-one dining opportunities at area restaurants. And then if you want, you can also pick that great brand-new baseball hat that I helped design, the cool, washable, stone-colored cotton with the navy bill with the orange and blue logo on it. 217-244-9455 is the number to call. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express card. Be the very next to join the Ag Group.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Time to talk about the agricultural weather forecast. Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated, joins us from his Kansas City, Missouri office. Good afternoon, Drew. Tell me about the weather forecast. Looks like farmers can stay in the field.
It does look pretty darn good. It's been kind of a refreshing start to the planting season after two or three years of muck to deal with. We are looking at pretty good conditions right now. We have a weak cool front that's coming through the western part of the Corn Belt, very slowly moving with very limited amounts of rainfall associated with it. That frontal system will go ahead and move through the eastern part of the belt late tomorrow, more likely be on Friday. And we will finally get some scattered showers to show up in the Ohio River Basin, but the rain amounts and coverage are going to be fairly low, and we're probably just going to be able to dodge some of those showers and continue with some of the field work. And if there are areas where rain does become a little bit more significant, the interruptions to field work probably won't last more than several hours or a day at the most, and we'll be right back at it again. I don't see another chance for rain in the lower parts of the eastern belt again until probably the latter part of next week. So there should be several days of aggressive field work taking place across a big part of the Midwest. And we still have good conditions down in the Delta and in the southeastern states as well. So the only places where field work might be a little slow would be in the western U.S. Corn Belt. But even there, the rain amounts have not been that impressive here recently. And the frequency may be up, but the shower activity is still fairly limited on the rain amounts.
I hesitate to ask this next question, but it's been bantered around a couple of times. I've heard in other media sources, you know what's coming, don't you? What
yes,
do you think?
Right.
And
I don't buy into it. I assume you're talking about the 1988 relationship here.
If you don't buy into it, I'm ready to be done.
Okay, well, that sounds good with me. The bottom line is that things are a lot different than they were in 1988. There are some similarities, but you can do that in just about any year, and the bottom line doesn't really necessarily have to change here.
All right, so let's go back to what we have at hand. Maybe we should go out to the southwest and to the west and talk about the hard red winter wheat growing areas and how they're coming out of their dormancy. Of course, they're out of dormancy, but really beginning a good part of their growing season.
That's right, and conditions out there are really quite wet and going to get more so that way as we go through this next week to 10 days. Almost a near daily occurrence of rain and thunderstorms will occur out that way. And we're fortunate up to this point where we aren't really dealing with wet weather diseases, but as we go deeper into spring and we get more warmth to occur on a daily basis, that risk is going to increase quite a bit. So for right now, the crop looks darn good. It's going to be continuing to develop aggressively. But as time moves forward, we get into the latter part of April and certainly in May, the risk of wet weather disease in the hard red wheat belt will become much, much greater. And so drier weather will have to come around in order to protect that crop.
Drew, thanks so much.
Have a great day.
Hey, that's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Joins us from that office each and every Wednesday right here on the Closing Market Report. Time to tell you to dial this number. It's 217-244-9455 or visit us online at willpledge.org and pledge your financial support to the agricultural programming from Illinois Public Media. It's important that you do that. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. Do it right now. The number to call is 217-244-9455. We bid some of our stations goodbye now. For the rest of you, we'll have an interview with Roger Johnson of the National Farmers Union.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is the Farming World, news and interviews from the land grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today we'll talk with Roger Johnson. He's the president of the National Farmers Union, better known, of course, as the NFU. It's a farmer organization founded more than 100 years ago and concerned from its beginnings with the stability and income of the farm. In 2009, Mr. Johnson was elected president of the NFU. Prior to that, and leading the family farm organization, Johnson was a third-generation family farmer from Turtle Lake, North Dakota, and he served as North Dakota's agriculture commissioner, a position he was first elected to in 1996. Mr. Johnson, thank you so much for joining us from your Washington, D.C. office today.
Good to be with you, Todd.
Now, tell me a little bit about your history with the NFU and with state politics in North Dakota, please.
Sure. Well, I was born on a farm in North Dakota that was actually homesteaded by my grandfather over 100 years ago, and grew up there, went off to the land grant institution, NDSU, got a degree in ag economics, came back and farmed, and then eventually, during that whole time that I was farming, I actually grew up in the Farmers Union organization. North Dakota's got a very strong state farmers union organization. So I was involved in it. I was involved in the county organization. I was the chair of the board of the local farmers union oil company, otherwise known as Senex to most folks around the country. And then eventually I was elected ag commissioner in 1996 and served in that capacity for a dozen years. And then just over a year ago, was elected as National Farmers Union president. That's kind of a short version of my history. I've been involved in the organization all my life.
You've been so active in politics. Are you active on the farm, or are you a farm owner?
Well, right now, my brother is doing the farming. I do it on shares, so officially, I guess I'm still a farmer, but practically speaking, I'm not out there very much anymore.
We understand. So you're on a 50-50 or 60-40? Or
yeah, it's a long ways from Washington, D.C. to the farm in Turtle Lake, North Dakota.
I bet it is. They're two different worlds, I suppose,
yes,
are they not?
They are. Yes. They are, very much so.
What is it that NFU is actively involved in seeking out in Washington, D.C. at this point?
Well, you know, there are a number of things. We are an organization that prides ourselves in supporting family farmers and ranchers around the country. Our basic strength, our core strength, is kind of in the Great Plains. We're first founded in Texas and moved up through the Great Plains and then kind of spread in both directions from there over the years. We are very active in paying attention to what the farm bill is looking like. We just passed a farm bill. We're in the early stages of implementation right now. The permanent disaster program, otherwise known as the SURE program, is one of the big priorities that Farmers Union had in the last farm bill, and we're just seeing that begin to be implemented now. Crop insurance is of substantial importance to us. It is probably the single most important risk management tool, safety net that we have in the farm program right now for farmers in the country. So we're going to make sure that that remains effective and part of the Farm Bill. And of course, we're starting hearings shortly on the next Farm Bill, as Chairman Peterson has made those announcements. We've been very actively involved in energy and climate issues. Energy in particular is one of those things where we've long supported ethanol as an example, renewable forms of energy and fuel, wind energy. We're big supporters of that and have a number of initiatives underway to promote wind energy. We want to make sure that as the Senate now begins to consider this question of whether it's going to be just an energy-only bill or a climate and energy bill, that we're well positioned to make sure that the kinds of incentives that are important for the ethanol industry, the biodiesel industry, the wind industry, as well as biomass production, that those incentives are really put in place and so that they become a part of the bill. Those are, I'd say, farm bill and energy kinds of issues are a real important part of what we've been working on. Of course, one of the things in front of Congress right now is the question of financial market reform. And most people understand that this economic crisis, this great recession that we are in the early stages of emerging from right now, was really caused by the lack of regulation that happened over the years as Congress and previous administrations just gradually pulled down all the different kinds of regulatory requirements that financial institutions had to pay attention to, and basically turned this into something which some have described as a glorified gambling casino with our money, with your money and my money. And as a result, we saw the economy collapse not only in our country but around the world. And so there's a very concerted effort now that is underway in the Senate. The House has already passed a bill to look at what's the right way to regulate this industry, and in particular to get a handle on these derivatives and swaps and these financial instruments that are unregulated and are sort of a mechanism that lots of folks in the finance industry have been using to make piles and piles of money at your and my expense.
Mr. Johnson, so that our listeners, farmer and consumer alike, will understand a bit more about the NFU, I'm sure that you had a position on the health care debate.
Yes.
That took place. Which side of that debate was NFU on?
We were very supportive of health care reform and remain so. Our members set our policy, and for many years we have been in favor of a single-payer universal care system, which is the same system that virtually every other major industrialized country in the world uses. And they, by the way, all provide care to all of their citizens at about half the cost that we provide care to the citizens in the U.S., short about 40, 45, 47 million Americans who don't get care covered under insurance. So we're very supportive of the legislation. We think, frankly, that it didn't go far enough, that it should have done more to control costs, and a public option really would have done that. But it's certainly a huge step in the right direction in trying to include a lot more folks and in getting rid of some of these, what I've long called, immoral actions that insurance companies have been able to use by denying coverage to insureds based on pre-existing conditions and dropping policies just when folks most needed the coverage and those sorts of things. So they've been corrected in the bill, and it's certainly a huge step forward.
Thank you very much. That'll give the folks listening a bit of a foundation on which to to take a look at NFU. Now, let's go back to financial regulation. That one is just heating up in Washington, D.C. Is the NFU for or against more financial regulation in the marketplace?
We are very much for it. We think that what you have to do is you have to take these trades that, you know, it used to be that the financial industry was very significantly regulated, and for very good reason. I mean, most banks, if they have 10% equity, that's a pretty well-capitalized bank. If I or any of my neighbors only had 10% equity on our farm, we'd consider to be bankrupt. You need a lot more equity in farming than you do in banking. And the fact that banks get along with so little equity, that's their own money. That means 90% of the money that they handle is someone else's money. It's our money as depositors or as borrowers. That they need to be regulated as to what they can do with those dollars. And the purpose of the regulations historically have been to make sure that they didn't put those in very risky investments. And that's why for many, many years, banks were precluded from issuing insurance policies or getting into that business. They were precluded from going on
derivative.
The derivatives. They were precluded from doing those kinds of things because they were unregulated, and they were, by their very nature, much riskier investments. And so if they put their money there and they lost it, it would actually not just be their money, it would be our money that would be lost. And so over the years, many in the industry have argued successfully that the regulations ought to be relaxed, 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 until they were, for all practical purposes, non-existent. And banks then found themselves in the position of having enormous financial stakes in very, very risky financial instruments that were unregulated, and in large part, that was the reason that we saw the economy collapse. So we've got to get a handle on this and make sure that those investments that are made with our money, with your money and our money, made by banks, are in fact put in very sound places, and that we regulate their ability to invest in highly speculative kinds of markets.
The farmers set the policy for NFU, is that correct?
Yes, our members, by the way we are organized, our members show up at our county conventions and they elect delegates to state conventions, and at the state conventions they elect delegates to national conventions, and then those delegates at our national convention are the ones that establish the policy.
Did they set financial policy the last time around?
Yes, actually our members did establish a policy on financial regulation. We did a number of special orders of business at our last convention, and that was one of them. I think we did six or seven. We did one on healthcare and on energy and the economy, and financial regulation was one of those, trade was another, and so forth. So yes, our members did establish a policy relative to financial regulation and very specifically said that they wanted there to be more oversight over these financial markets.
Today we're talking with Roger Johnson. He is the president of the National Farmers Union. You're listening to The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Land Grant right here in Urbana-Champaign, the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We'll return in a moment.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Hey, have you dialed this number yet? 217-244-9455. If not, please do with your financial support for Illinois Public Media. Dave Dickey is in studio with us this afternoon. He's the Director of Agricultural Programming at IPM and has many reasons for you to dial in with that support at 217-244-9455. It's actually really simple, quick, and easy to do if you haven't done it yet. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, American Express. Of course, you can write us a check and put it in the mail. All you have to do is dial 217-244-9455. Do it right now, and if you're listening online, you can visit willpledge.org. That's willpledge.org.
Todd, I was just thinking about this today. Every week I go to a coffee shop about once a week, and I pay for a coffee, and it costs me about $2.50 for that coffee. And it made me think, is our agricultural service worth a cup of coffee a week, or $2.50, which is $120 a month? So for $2.50 a week, you get the Ag e-letter, podcasts, and MP3 downloadable files, our on-air presence, a phone service, Outlook panels, YouTube service, online, real-time streaming of our service, live real-time quotes, 15 analysts, and 5 meteorologists. Is it worth $2.50 a week or $120 a year? We'd like to think so, yes. 217-244-9455 is the number to call.
It's 217-244-9455. Remember, Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. It's just important that you call in. Tell them you're supporting agriculture and which radio station you're listening to. Please do that. Call at 217-244-9455. It's quick, it's simple, and it's easy to do, isn't it, Dave?
It's extremely easy to do. It only takes 30 seconds. And get that baseball hat when you do it. It's designed by me. It's just in time for spring. 217-244-9455 is the number to call.
This is The Farming World. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today we're talking with Roger Johnson, the president of the National Farmers Union, better known as the NFU. When we left, he last told us that the organization's policies were set by the farmers from the ground up. We were talking about financial regulation and financial policy. Mr. Johnson, what's happening on the Hill at this point?
And, you know, the bill that is being considered right now in Congress is one that basically what it says at its heart is these derivatives, these which are financial instruments that are one step or two steps or three steps removed from the basic financial transaction, that these derivatives have to be transparent. One of the things that you learn in economics is that markets work best when the information that is used by buyers and sellers is available to everybody. That's a way of saying that the information is very transparent. And so one of the basic requirements that is a part of this re-regulation of financial markets is to make sure that that information is transparent. The way you do that is you have these derivatives become, to the degree that they are standard kinds of instruments, you have them cleared over exchanges so that everyone can see what they were sold for, what they were bought for, who the buyers and sellers were. And when everybody knows that, there is more information available to the rest of us in the marketplace, and we can all better judge as to whether these trades are appropriate, whether they are risky, the degree of risk that's associated with them, etc. And so fundamentally, that's the issue that Congress is grappling with. Should these derivatives be traded in full view of the public, just like a lot of the other markets are, you know, the Chicago Board of Trade, where people know what wheat trades for, what corn trades for, what soybeans, what oil trades for, all those things because they're on established markets. Derivatives of those entities and of other financial products should also be traded in a similar fashion so everyone can see, and then you have a much more efficiently operating market and one that's not likely to be so surprised by having lots of folks heavily invested in extraordinarily highly speculative positions.
So regulation mostly involves the ability to standardize the derivative such that such that people would be able to understand what it is and to put it on an exchange. I have a secondary question that's related to that, because you did bring up the exchanges and the Chicago Board of Trade, or the CME group at this point. I'm wondering whether your farmer members are for or against more regulation there in terms of the index funds and the size of positions that they can take. And that might be extended to all exchanges and include, for instance, crude oil.
Sure. Sure. We, as I said before, Todd, we very much are in favor of markets that operate more efficiently and that are more transparent. And to the degree that you've got these transactions that are happening out of the public view, that's not a good thing. It's not a way for markets to behave more efficiently, and it is the principal reason that we saw such a major crash in the economy, according to lots of economists. Now, not everyone believes that, but lots of folks really do. And so, yes, we think that, and as a matter of course, for many, many years, the IRS, to make a determination as to whether you or I were hedging a product or speculating in a marketplace, those are two very different things. And there were limits placed on the number of positions that we could take, the number of contracts that we could enter, either either on the buy side or on the sell side. And there's very good reason to have those limits. It is so that you can avoid an entity or a couple of entities essentially cornering the market, going in and buying up so much of the market that you drive the market price higher, or selling so much that you force the market price down just by your own actions as an individual company or entity. That's why you have, as a matter of history, that's why you have limits that are imposed on these different entities in the amount that they can go into these marketplaces. The CME is a perfect example, where it's a very, very thinly traded market, especially for things like milk and dairy products. And as a consequence, there are, well, in fact, that's one of the things that the USDA and the Department of Justice right now are very closely looking at with respect to the dairy industry and potential economic concentration in that industry, and whether there's undue ability to arbitrarily influence that marketplace to the detriment of the farmers and, in fact, to the detriment of the consumers. So that whole area is something that Congress is looking at right now to try and figure out, okay, what's the proper level of oversight or regulation that should be applied here, so that we don't find ourselves in the kind of pickle that we found ourselves in about a year and a half or 2 years ago.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Happy to do so.
Roger Johnson is the president of the NFU, the National Farmers Union. He talked to us from his Washington, D.C. office. You've been listening to The Farming World. It's a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.